ghosts, have they become a cliche? Or can we once again examine this phenomena seriously? After all, isn't it really our own afterlife we're curious about? Let's delve a little deeper on Jim Harold's Ghost Insight. Welcome to Ghost Insight. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And today we're going to talk about cemeteries and symbols in cemeteries. Fascinating topic. I never thought about a book on that topic, but I think it's a great idea. And we're going to momentarily be talking with Tui Snyder about it. She's the author of a recent book on the subject. First, I wanted to let you know, Plus Club members, stay tuned to the end of the show. We're going to give you a status update on the migration of users over to the new Paranormal Plus platform and app and website. I just put out a podcast, a Plus podcast, where I put this on the head end. And I thought, you know, it might be a better idea to put it on the back end of it. That way people who want to hear it can either listen to it after the interview, maybe skip right to it if they're very anxious. And people who are already migrated over, which are numbering into the hundreds now, don't have to listen to it because they already know the score. I just want to make sure we keep good communication with everybody and that we keep you updated on the progress, which is going along pretty well. So with that, we will get with Tui Snyder on cemetery symbols. And after that interview, stay tuned for more details on the new Paranormal Plus Club. Cemeteries, interesting places. I mean, it's just an odd feeling to walk about them, and you look at the monuments and tombstones or the mausoleums, whatever it might be. And oftentimes you look at, for example, a tombstone, and you'll see a great symbol on it, and you'll wonder what that is, or what does it mean, or what does it say about, what does a tombstone say about the life of a person? In fact, we went to a service about a year ago, and we were at a graveyard, and a gentleman had ended up, and I didn't even know he had passed, a big broadcasting guy in the area had passed, and he had a huge microphone, which, you know, I might like that on my stone. But nevertheless, these symbols, what do they mean? I've always wondered, and we're going to find out today. Our guest is Tui Snyder. She has a new book out called Understanding Cemetery Symbols, A Field Guide for Historic Graveyards. And I think it's going to be great. Tui is a writer and a travel blogger specializing in offbeat sites, overlooked history, quirky travel destinations, and haunted places. Tui has worn a lot of hats in her life and is especially fond of berets, she says. And we're so interested in this topic. We thank her so much for joining us. You can check her out at TuiSnyder.com. Tui, welcome to the program today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Jim. I'm really excited to be here.
So why did you decide to turn your attention to cemeteries and the symbols within them?
Well, it did. I have had a lifelong love of graveyards. And in fact, when I was 9 years old, a creepy janitor tried to kidnap my friend and I, and we escaped by running through a historic graveyard because we could run through it. Yeah, we knew our way through. He was tripping. That's what he was a big guy. You know, we were little kids and he would have caught us, but he tripped and was running and tripping over headstones. So that saved us. But the reason I got into this book was I wanted it for myself. I do a lot of historic research, and I find that going to a cemetery is the best way to really find out how someone spelled their last name. I mean, it's going to be chiseled on their headstone. If there's some discrepancy, which there often is in old newspaper articles, you'll find the same name done three or four different ways. But while I was there, as you mentioned, you just start to notice all these different things, like little acronyms. What does that stand for? Strange little symbols of this or that. Why does this person have a hand pointing up and this person have a hand pointing down on their tombstone? And I thought, well, I've got a book about wildflowers at home, you know, that I keep in my, when we travel, I have a book about trees and snakes and birds. There's got to be a field guide to cemetery symbols out there. And while I did find a lot of good books, and I know anyone else who's interested in the topic of symbolism will know what I'm talking about, books about symbols tend to weigh about 20 pounds. And B, you could not stick them in a purse. I mean, and if you brought them in your car, they would still be taking up a lot of room. So I thought, and then sometimes you'll find little guides about graveyards, but they just talk about graveyards from A to Z, and they don't really go into the why is that a symbol? Why does ivy mean friendship? It just seems rather random, but there's a reason for that. Your ivy clings to things, and it sticks with you, so it stands for faithfulness and friendship because it sticks with you the way a friend does. So I tried to make a guide, a field guide that people could have in their purse or their glove box so that they could just pull it out and have a little reference while they're walking around the historic graveyard.
What are some of the more common symbols that maybe we see all the time, we just kind of take them for granted, and we don't understand what they are, and we just never think about? What are some of the more common ones?
There are so many things that, well, you talk about the ones that we walk right by. Some of those are my favorite. Some things can be very subtle. When you see statues, of course, everyone loves to see a human figure, and the wealthier someone is, the more likely they might have a really pretty angel statue standing there. And a lot of times the angel looks sad or peaceful or thoughtful. All right, we get that much. But pay attention to where the hand is. If the hand of the angel is touching his or her neck, they're implying sacrifice. If it's a little lower at the chest area, that stands for charity, because in artwork, charity is often shown nursing a baby. In the Victorian era, they weren't going to have a bare breast as often. But so there's things like that. You walk right by that you don't even know. So those are a lot of those are the ones that I always love discovering, because those are very fun.
There's one on your cover of your book, and it's a great cover because they have a lot of these little things on them. And the one I think I know what it is. I'm pretty sure, because I think a great aunt of mine has this on hers. But the five-pointed star with the little little symbols around them, what is that five-pointed star?
Yes. Was she a member? Was your relative a member of the Order of the Eastern Star?
Yes.
Yes. That's what it stands for. And actually, that acronym that's within the five-pointed star, which is interesting because people see a five-pointed star, and I see this is another reason I felt compelled to write the book, was people make up stuff when they don't understand what something means. So I would read on a forum, a history forum maybe, or a blogger would just say, oh, there was a five-pointed star. I think they must have been into the witchcraft or the occult. A five-pointed star stands quite is a Christian symbol quite often, and it stands for the five wounds of Jesus. So it's not, oh no, grandma was into some sort of, was casting spells when she has a, maybe even an angel with a star on her head, something like that. I just want to mention that. But the Order of the Eastern Star has a wonderful acronym. It spells fatal. It sounds so bleak and so dire. There you are in the cemetery and it says fatal, and you think, well, isn't that a bit obvious? You've got a headstone here. But what that stands for is fairest among 10,000, altogether lovely. And then inside, which is pretty, you know, after you, it's not so dire. And then each of the things, each of the little rays of the star has a little teeny, they're kind of hard to see because they do get worn down unless they're in a very hard stone like granite. But they have a different little symbol to symbolize the five different roles that women might have throughout her lifetime. And these, they refer to specific biblical heroines, like there's Ada and Ruth and Esther and Electa and Martha, I think. Did I say five? Those are the five biblical heroines, and each of them has a little thing. Like Martha has a column because she was the sister of Lazarus, who was raised from the dead, and a broken column indicates a life cut short. So there's a whole bunch into that little teeny little star just packed with symbols.
Yeah, that one always fascinated me because my great aunt, she died when I was very, very young, probably 3 or 4 years old. And I ended up with the little pin, the Eastern Star pin that she had. Somehow that got handed down to me. And I just thought it was every very, as a kid, I'm like, oh, this is so mystical. What is this?
You know? It is.
Another one I saw here, and I've never seen this before. Someone's holding up their two palms faced out, and it looks like they have the Vulcan sign, from Mr. Spock on each hand. What in the world is that?
Oh, I love that one. In fact, the first time I found it's from a Hebrew cemetery. This is a Jewish symbol. And the first time I saw it, I actually, you know, we were in a historic cemetery, and I just went, yay, I finally found the Spock hands. And I have a couple different examples in the book itself, because you can see it different ways. But yeah, it does look a lot, for your listeners, it looks a lot like the live long and prosper salute that Commander Spock on Star Trek would use. And the reason for that is that Leonard Nimoy was Jewish, yes. And he had noticed some of the priests making this. It's a kind of a secret hand symbol. In some rituals, they will make this symbol, and it's called the hands of Kohen, or the Kohen hands. And so what that means is that you are a descendant from the tribe of Kohen. But he suggested that to Gene Roddenberry when they were developing the character of Commander Spock, and so, or, you know, of Spock. And so they liked it and they used it. But it is interesting. So that's where it comes from. And if you have a friend who descended from the tribe of Kohen, it's kind of an interesting little thing I learned. They are forbidden from attending funerals, so except for their closest relatives and closest friends.
It's interesting because I heard that anecdote that the Spock symbol, the Spock hands, as you call it, came from the Hebrew, and Nimoy was Jewish, but I never knew that it was on gravestones. That is fascinating. What's and again, this is like asking somebody, what's their favorite child? Give us a couple of your favorite symbols.
Oh, let's see. I know, that's a good one. And it does sort of change. It's generally the one that I just discovered, the one that I finally got a satisfactory answer for, because there's sort of a folkloric reason or explanation for the symbol, and I'm just not satisfied to like get it from a few sources. But some of my favorites, while we're talking about Jewish symbols, my book is primarily, I guess, skewed toward Christianity simply because that's what I find mostly in America, but I did visit as many Hebrew cemeteries as I could. But one of my favorite unique, or maybe not, I shouldn't say unique, but interesting ones I've seen is a water pitcher. And when you see a water pitcher on a grave, because it's easy to walk right by and just go, oh, a pitcher. And I'm not saying picture here, I'm saying picture, but pitcher for water. Now, if you are in a Hebrew grave, that means that this person descended from the tribe of Levi, and the Levites would wash the hands of the high priest. So that's what that refers to. But if you're in a Christian graveyard and you see a water pitcher on a grave, it most likely refers to someone who was a teetotaler, a woman, definitely. And if she lived during the Prohibition era, she might have been really involved in the temperance movement and you know, an axe wielding Carrie Nation follower. So it's you'll see it on the grave of a woman who is, I don't know if martyr is the right word, but who really gave her life to others and was known for her strong moral character, someone who was really self-sacrificing. So it's someone you might want to look into their story when you get home. Type it into Ancestry.com or Google, or just try to do a little research. So that's one of my favorites right now anyway.
Have symbols changed over time?
Oh, yeah, they really have. And I guess what I should say, or what was a nice surprise to me, I always enjoy when doing research, when I think I know the answer and it ends up being different. I like being surprised by the things I find out. And so despite a lifelong fascination with graveyards, when I finally decided to get really serious about writing this book several years ago, I started, you know, reading and taking serious notes, organizing my notes, and I would come across the idea over and over. Many books start off saying, oh, 100 years ago, 150 years ago, our ancestors, most of them were illiterate. And so that's why we use symbols, because they just couldn't read. But I thought, you know, I really want to know what the literacy rates were. And much to my surprise, America has always been a rather highly literate country. There was a gosh, in the 1600s, it was in New England, it was close to 100% in Boston. Of course, I mean, we're talking about white men, and obviously slaves weren't allowed to learn to read, and women weren't taught to read. But still, the literacy rates in America have always been quite high. So that just didn't make sense. But as I spent more time learning about symbols, I began to see that our relationship with symbols changed over time. So while now, like you mentioned, the fella who, since he was, I don't know what he was, but he was in broadcasting in some manner, so he had a large microphone as his on his headstone. It's very straightforward. But the way our ancestors used symbols, what I discovered, is a little more poetic. So let's say... when you see nowadays, one example I like to give is squirrels, because people love to talk about squirrels. And I see squirrels sometimes engraved on modern headstones or just a little squirrel statue, maybe holding an acorn. When you see that on a modern cemetery, that just probably means your Aunt Madge loved to feed the squirrels. And it doesn't mean anything beyond that. It doesn't mean anything symbolic, really, or if she, but if you see it on a historic headstone, it's actually a symbol of meditation and striving to be more spiritual, because acorns symbolize something that starts off small and then grows into something big and very long-lived. So it's a symbol of our potential. So it's a very poetic way of looking at symbols that our ancestors have that I think we don't do as much of as we used to.
Now, what is the most popular symbol? And we could say present day, and maybe now, obviously, I think if you're talking about religion, a cross would be very popular. A Star of David would be very popular. But what are some of the more popular ones, and where in the past, and where are some of the more popular ones today?
One that I notice both then and now that's rather popular are doves. Just a dove stands for the Holy Spirit, and it can be used different ways. I mean, it can express different things. If it's flying down from heaven, it's the Holy Spirit coming down. And sometimes it's seen with an olive branch in its beak. And the olive branch, we know, oh, that stands for peace. But that actually goes back to ancient Greek customs of waving olive branches around to dispense evil spirits. I don't know if they burned them and if it was like smudging. I still need to learn a little more on that. But so I do see that even on modern graves. Quite often you will see these on the graves of children. It's another way to express their innocence. But I see this in graves that are 100 years old, and I see them in headstones that were placed last week. So that's a very popular one. One that I thought was so interesting are the heavenly gates, because up until not that long ago, I just thought, well, you see heavenly gates. I didn't think about them too much. And this is, once again, one of those things you can just walk right by. Well, I looked into the gates a little bit more, and I realized that when you see heavenly gates on a headstone, they're always shown partly open. The gates to heaven are never shut. That's, well, no big deal, right? Well, right. It turns out that's a reference to a book that came out right after the Civil War called The Gates Ajar. And it was actually really controversial. This woman wrote a book because after the Civil War, so many people in America were mourning the death of someone. They had one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was a very good to say we were a nation in mourning. And that's one of the reasons, the Victorians, the many rules they had about mourning became so popular. But it was just such a part of our culture, mourning itself. Well, this woman, Elizabeth Stuart Phelps, she wrote a book called The Gates Ajar. And it might have just been yet another book, but somehow it just seized the imagination of the American populace, right? I think it was 1868 or right about then. And it was just wildly successful. But the thing about it was, she said that when people pass away, God leaves the gates to heaven slightly open. So that's why her book's called The Gates Ajar. And so spirits can come back and forth and keep tabs on the living, and they know what we're up to. And people found that very comforting. And of course, many ministers found that very threatening and were upset about it. So that only helped increase its popularity. And it was actually one of the first mass media campaigns in America was all about the gates ajar. They had patent medicines about the gates ajar. They had clothing, which I've yet to see, that was based on the gates ajar. I did just visit a museum down in Houston, the National Museum of Funeral History, and they had a picture of someone, a picture they'd taken of a dead person, laid out in their living room, and they had photos around it, and they had a type of floral arrangement that's called the Gates Ajar that is still popular today. So if you Google like florist and Gates Ajar, you will get versions of this type of floral arrangement that's based on this woman's book. And that's a very long-winded way of telling you why, when you go to a historic cemetery, pay attention to when you see the heavenly gates. They are always going to be open. And that's why, because of that book.
Question, was there ever cases where you found maybe people were using symbols to surreptitiously communicate something? In other words, there's something that they wanted people to know, but maybe that was controversial, or maybe in their life was hidden. I mean, that might be a tough one to suss out, but were there any of these symbols that were kind of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge? People in the club will know this means X.
That is a good one. I will have to think on that. I have probably with some of the fraternal organizations, of which there are so many, there might be something. And I'm sure I have walked right by many a double meaning. I did read about a headstone that these two women who had either dated or been ex-wives of this man, they had an engraver make this lovely sounding poem, and you read it and it's like, oh, hold on, what sweet sentiments they made on that epitaph. But it's an acrostic poem, and so if you look at the first letter of each word on each line, it spells, I think, an expletive, like, you know, F-U, essentially. So,
I know. I love it.
That one. And people walked by it for years, and then I think not that long ago, someone noticed it and went, wait, that can't be a coincidence. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I want to ask about another one. I love this cover. This is a great cover, folks. You got to look it up, Understanding Cemetery Symbols. Of course, buy it too, but the cover is nice. There you have two lizards basically chasing each other's tail, kind of in a circular mode there. That's an interesting one to me. What in the world is the two lizards chasing each other's tails? That looks kind of spooky. What's that all about?
Yeah, I know. I thought that was kind of a neat one. And it was just in the corner on something I saw from one of the headstones. Like, I think it was a rather fancy mausoleum. And fancy mausoleums are fun to look at because it sometimes incorporated into the decoration, you might find extra little symbols that are snuck in there. So when you were talking about people who might have snuck extra little symbols in, it made me think of that. But in ancient Rome, the lizard stood for hope for the afterlife, which seems odd. But this is probably a Christian symbol, and it refers to the resurrection. It's the resurrection and eternal life. Whenever you see something going in a circle, a circular motion like that, so that's what that stands for, oddly enough. Yeah, but it's a neat one. I like lizards. We have a lot of them here in Texas.
Well, here's another one. Now, this one we normally know is kind of like either poison or a pirate, but a skull and crossbones. What did that mean in the context of that particular gravestone?
Oh, yeah. On the cover? Well, yeah. So we call that memento mori, which is Latin. And it stands for Latin for remember you must die, essentially. And it just seemed so dire. But the epitaphs really changed over time. In the colonial times in America, you would just mostly just see a birth and death date, and then they might say something like, you know, remember to die, you know, in Latin. Like, wow, thanks. I mean, their life expectancy wasn't that long anyway. You wouldn't think they would need such a, you know, I'm going to put that on my to-do list. But when you see a skull and crossbones, you can call it a memento mori because it is a mortality symbol, as I say, just a straight-up mortality symbol. Doesn't mean the person was a pirate. Doesn't mean they were trying to be tough or anything like that. It's just very straightforward. Now, over time, these skull and crossbones they softened up. Like you see that one in the lower left corner of the book, you see a little head with angel's head or a little cherub head with wings. And so from about, the 1600s, the 1700s, by the 1800s, so the 1600s, you would see the skull and crossbones. The 1700s, you start to just see maybe a face with wings coming out of it. And they call that a soul effigy. And that was that would be like the soul's flight to heaven. And then it just sort of morphed from there. You would, by the Victorian era, you would see cherubs or a nice cherubic face with wings. But it was a bit of a progression. You could almost guess the year. Like if you had three different pictures and you didn't show the dates and you had to guess when the tombstones were, you could put them kind of in order of when they came out by looking at how bleak the imagery is and whether it was the skull and I guess by how much flesh you see on it. So is it a skull? Is it just a face with wings or is it a cherub?
Now, this I have to ask, did you find anything, you know, most of these are pretty innocuous. I mean, it isn't anything spooky or scary. They have pretty prosaic kind of explanations. Were there any that are like, ooh, that's pretty sinister? Did you find any like that?
I'm not sure if sinister is quite the right word, but when I went to New Orleans recently, I went to their Masonic Cemetery, and then I also went to Lake Lawn Metairie Cemetery, and I saw some of their Masonic stuff. Like they have one that says like secrecy, darkness, and silence, I think it said on it, and it was surrounding a double-headed eagle, and it had a multi-pointed star. And I thought, what is that all about? And I did get a little bit of a spooky feeling from that one. I just thought, there's just more going on here than I know. And there is just so many symbols. Like I thought, you know, I could just do a book about this cemetery, the Masonic Cemetery, all the symbols in here, because I did not even know what they all were. And it felt very, it did feel like I was a little jumpy, let's put it that way, by the time I got out of that cemetery, because I was running around there alone in the afternoon. And I just thought, I don't know, I wouldn't put it past if I suddenly saw a robed monk just come walking out and chanting or something from behind one of these tombs, I wouldn't be too surprised.
Obviously, you're interested in the supernatural and the metaphysical and have been for some time, but how did this project change you and maybe your perception of the dead and of cemeteries themselves?
Oh, that is a good question. Well, one thing that changed for me was, I don't know why, but I had it in my mind that even though I believe in ghosts and I had things happen as a child in my house, that's what sparked my interest in the paranormal were the things that went bump during the day in my house. And so I really rejected the idea that cemeteries would be haunted places or have any sort of paranormal activity. I wasn't really open to that. But when I did actually, you know, I did write a book about haunted places you can visit and Paranormal Texas. It's just places that you can actually go to that are haunted, have paranormal, you know, people have reported paranormal activity there, and some of them were cemeteries. And I'd always think, oh yeah, right, whatever. I just don't, that's the last place someone's going to hang out. I mean, literally. But then when I was doing some research in a cemetery, it was 9 in the morning, I think. It was very early in the day, and I was running around, and I saw a grave that said, had an interesting epitaph. My friend said, hey, go over there and read the epitaph over there. So I ran over, and I saw the epitaph read, "The Orphan's True Friend." And I thought, wow, that's really great. I'm going to have to look into this guy's life. So I knelt down to get a nice photo. And as I was kneeling down, I hear children giggling. And in my mind's eye, I see an image of them. They're like three little kids. And I stand up thinking, oh, there's some little kids laughing at me. And I look up and I look over to where they should have been. And there's nothing there. And I realized that, wow, the orphan's true friend. And that gave me chills. And I realized, you know, I'm going to have to change my stance on this. So now I have a different feeling about why people experience the paranormal in cemeteries, which I can share if you want to hear it.
Oh, yes, please do.
All right. So when I was researching my travel book about haunted places to visit, I started to notice certain scenes. Of course, ballrooms always seem to have, they just always seem to be haunted. And I thought, well, maybe when you get a group of people together, united by a similar emotion, it sort of stains that area, you know, residual hauntings. So I'm like, okay. And then for some reason, elevators, I have no idea why, but elevators, haunted elevators are the thing. Well, libraries are also a place that are often haunted. And I thought, you know, the thing about graveyards and and libraries that they have in common is that people are quiet when they are there. And they just, you know, we put on our behavior and we realize we need to be, if you see someone else standing there in a graveyard, you realize maybe they're mourning. You know, you want to give them some space. So you just instinctively, we don't know how we're doing it, but we tamper down our own energy level or our own, and we become very quiet. We become receptive, which I think much to say we are not receptive. People might be, your Aunt Madge might be trying to get a hold of you all day long at home, but you're running around making grocery lists and this and that. When you go to visit her at her grave, you've actually kind of quieted yourself down and put yourself into a receptive state. So I think it's one of the few times in our busy lives that we actually make ourselves be receptive. So that's my theory. I don't know how to prove it, but that's one of my ideas.
Well, that certainly sounds like a good theory to me, for sure. And I think that if you're interested in cemeteries and learning more, I've learned more just in this last half hour about a lot of things. I'm sure if you pick up the book, you'll learn even more. You can check out Understanding Cemetery Symbols, a field guide for historic graveyards. And the author has been our guest today, Tui Snider. Tui, where can people find the book and also more information about everything you do?
Well, you can just go to Amazon and type in Understanding Cemetery Symbols, and my book should pop up pretty easily there if you're interested in the book. If you're curious about me and what I'm getting up to, or you want to just read and see some of the more photos I've taken, et cetera, drop by my website. I have over 600 articles there of spanning. I don't just talk about, a lot of them are about cemeteries, but I have some about haunted hotels I've been to. In fact, I've got a couple investigations coming up that I'm going to be at, and travel and just quirky offbeat things that I find there. So that's TuiSnider.com. So it's just my name.com. Drop by and say hi there. That's like two great places to find me.
And by the way, that's TuiSnider, Tui Snider. Tui, thank you for joining us today on Ghost Insight.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim. This was fun.
Well, I thought that was just a very interesting show. One thing I love about my job and about these programs is, although having done them for 12 years and done probably over 1,400 shows at this time, mostly on the paranormal topic or related topics, I always realize there's something new under the sun or something I haven't thought about. And it's one of the pleasures of doing this. And hopefully it's one of the pleasures of listening. And speaking of listening, I want to talk to you briefly about the new Paranormal Plus Club. Now, if you have already moved over and you feel comfortable with everything, there's really no reason to listen to this, except please give me your feedback of what you think about the new club and the new app and the new website. It's almost been 100% thumbs up. I think one person out of several hundred now who have moved over have said, you know, I don't like this. and I think that's pretty good. So we're really excited about it. So here's the deal if you've not been moved over. Yearly members who have a significant amount of time on their membership, anybody who is pretty much most people that are in the month of September or later for their eventual renewal, they're going to be added into the Paranormal Plus Club by a company called Libsyn, L-I-B-S-Y-N. And this new Paranormal Plus Club and new app, the Spooky Studio app, which hopefully you've downloaded on Apple or Android, where you can listen to the free shows. And as soon as you're imported in or you join the new Plus Club, you can listen to the Plus shows as well on it. It's all powered by Libsyn and their My Libsyn platform. Very robust, very nice. And again, great reviews so far. So people who have subscribed for a year and who, I don't know the exact cutoff date, but sometime in September, their renewal date is for yearly, will be imported automatically. Usually what will happen is you get one email from me saying we're moving you over, and then a second email once you're moved over by Libsyn explaining, okay, we've moved you over, here are the steps you have to do to activate your account. And I must say, these people who are being imported over who have a significant amount of time left, there's no extra charge at all for this. This is just a continuation of your previous membership. Now, people who are on a shorter time frame, let's say monthly people, or people whose yearly memberships are ending in the next week or two, what we're doing with them is pretty much every day we're canceling out their renewal payments. We are sending them, and so we don't want anybody to get double charged. And we're saying, you know, your date is thus and so. You have access to the old site until your renewal date. And at that time, if you want to continue, you just follow this link to sign up to the new club. So it's very kind of self-directed in that way. And on the new sign-up page, we have videos that will show you. There'll be a link in this email that will say, hey, you know, just watch these videos to show you how to sign up, how to consume the content. And those also appear to be very helpful to people. I've had relatively few questions on the process once people take time to look at the video. Sometimes people get anxious and say, well, you know, I went there and I don't understand. And then once they watch the videos, they say, oh, you explain this in the videos. You gotta love it, but it's okay. I understand. I get anxious when I want to sign up to something that I'm excited about. I get excited when I get excited, I guess, about something, and I want to sign up now, and I don't need to read the instruction manual. Well, anyway, so the long and short of it is you should be getting emails from us. Now, at this point, the majority of people have been contacted either with that initial email or follow-up email with Libsyn. So I would recommend you go into your spam folder, your junk folder, and look for any messages from paranormalpodcast@gmail.com, Jim Harold, me, or Libsyn, Libsyn. And perhaps they've landed there. Also, Gmail users, I love Gmail, but they've got a nasty habit of hiding things in different tabs, like the promotions tab or the update tab or the forums tab. Check all those different tabs for an email from me or Libsyn, because they could be very well hiding in there. And again, we hope to have, I'm recording this on Tuesday, August 22nd. We hope to have this process complete by the end of next week. That's why I'm shooting for a certain amount of this I can control with the monthly renewals and the people that are coming up, and we're moving along every day, contacting a day or two worth of people. The other piece, I've got to kind of rely on Libsyn, and they've done a fine job. It's just that it takes time, and it's not something that could be done quickly if it's to be done correctly. It's kind of like speed or accuracy. Pick one. And we're trying to be as accurate as possible. Make sure everybody gets what they pay for. Now, in the interim, if you have an active membership, you can still access the Plus shows at jimharold.net. You're listening to this. No change there. The changes come when you move over to the new system. So it's our goal to get everybody what they paid for. We want no one to feel slighted. It's our goal to do this in such a way that it's as easy as possible. And really, I mean, I've had people say, what a difference. What a better system. As I said, when we start doing all of this, when we pick the system we're under now in 2011, I feel very comfortable in saying it was the best for what we were doing. It was the absolute best. But with the proliferation of smartphones and apps and all of that, you know, it got kind of long in the tooth. And people were having issues where they were trying to get in and they would get logged out and they couldn't mark podcasts that they had listened to. And people's, and rightfully so, the goal got higher. You know, people expected more because they had other apps that did all these marvelous things. So we made the decision that we had to, even though, frankly, I'm going to make less per member, that this is something that needed to be done to make the Paranormal Plus Club the best it could be. Some of you are old enough to remember that, be all you can be. Well, I want the Plus Club to be all it could be, and I think that it is right now. So I hope you enjoy it. Stay tuned to your inbox. If you have any questions, go over to jimharold.com or jimharold.net. Click on the big red button that says Contact Jim, and feel free to ask me, because we've had several people who have said, oh, I didn't get the email. And then I looked and they had been sent an email and I resent it or said, check your spam. And they found it and they're like, oh, yeah. So I have no problem fielding those kind of emails. It's my job. I thank you very much for being a Paranormal Plus member. Sorry for being a little long-winded here, but we want to get all of the information out. And we thank you so much. And we'll talk to you next time on Ghost Insight. Have a great night, everybody. Bye-bye.